Right.
There we go. Well, good day.
Is a good day.
Yes, we woke up on the right side of the roses, that's for sure.
That's right. We're watching grass from down, not
Yeah,
up.
not up. Yes.
Anyway, it's going to be Thanksgiving weekend. Have a good Thanksgiving weekend right up front. This is in
Yeah.
Canada, of course, for
In Canada.
folks watching in the United States.
Yes, we have a different one than you, and that's the way it goes.
We do things differently. No question.
Very, very true. It's interesting you say that we do things different. I was looking through the news the other day, and I see that the Supreme Court of Canada has been reserved its decision on whether the Safe Third Country agreement between Canada and the United States is constitutionally correct.
According to the Canadian Constitution.
According to the Canadian Constitution, yeah.
And what's the argument?
Opponents to the Safe Third Country agreement that was signed decades ago between Ottawa and Washington argue that it, quote, contracts out, end quote, Canada's international obligation to refugee claimants to the United States without proper follow-up to ensure Washington is doing the job. They want the court to declare the legislation underpinning the pact a violation of Section 7 of Canada's Charter of Rights and Freedom, guaranteeing life, liberty, and security of the person. The federal government is basically saying, these people are seeking protection in Canada without really going through the whole process in the United States. And I think that the government is probably right on that, but who are we to decide whether a country is doing something right or wrong? I don't think our government really likes it when people stick their nose into our business, and this is really, in my view anyways, what we're doing, saying that the US is not doing things properly.
Well, what's the suggestion that it's the U.S. is undercutting or undermining the UNHCR or the UN's Charter on Refugees? Mean, there's almost 5 million people have entered the U.S. in the last 2 years without particularly looking closely at their claims. If you look at the reports in the media, which are fairly consistent now on that issue. So, if the just superficially, if all those people are worried about how they're going to be treated in the United States as refugees, why are they going there in such huge numbers? And
Well, and again, my opinion, having worked on the land borders for a few years, I could never understand how a person could apply for refugee status, asylum, whatever you want to call it, in Canada when they are arriving from the United States. To me, it's always been an issue because if you were a legitimate refugee, why aren't you seeking asylum in the first country that you get to? If you look at international flights coming to Canada, we have very, very few flights that arrive here from anywhere in the world that would allow somebody to claim Canada as their first country of asylum. I mean, I could think of something like Beijing to Vancouver, right? Chinese nationals could probably very easily say, well, this is the first country of asylum. Most of the international flights are coming from Britain, France, Germany, through the United States. So if you want to be a refugee or an asylum seeker, why aren't you claiming the protection from that particular country? Why are you waiting to come to Canada after your third or fourth trip to file a claim? And to me, it boils down to two things. One, I'm a country shopper. I'm really not a refugee. And the second is that we must have a pretty lax system where people know that it's the probability of you losing your refugee claim, or the fact that it takes 15 or 20 years to remove you, is probably not lost on the world's population that's moving around.
Right. Well, it's not unusual that this shopping, if you will, for the best deal in Europe, you have now since 2015 had the same problem where they opened up the basically the pipeline from North Africa and Central Asia. Under the Merkel government's invitation to come to Germany, and all these people who went wandering through Italy and Central Europe and Eastern Europe, they didn't bother. And this is in the EU, which supposedly is a monolithic group that has the same rules applying to all its members. Nobody wanted to be a refugee in Hungary or Austria or Italy. They wanted to be a refugee in Germany. And they've had literally millions of people wander through a number of states where the safe third country rule still applies, and nobody actually enforce. In fact, in the case of the Hungarians, they just say, "Don't bother coming here. Go around because we know you're not coming to Hungary. You want to get to Germany, so why don't you find a way to get to Germany and don't bother us?" Which, of course, is putting them in a tough spot with. All the open borders crowd up in Brussels. And this begs the question, the Canadians are questioning American resolve with respect to refugees. The Brussels crowd wants open borders all the way through Europe. So why, there's a lot of money that's being made to argue philosophies, not laws and not operationally. It makes no difference. The numbers are still there. The people are still showing up, and this to me is nothing more than a clown show legally with governments pontificating their various viewpoints. But basically, they don't want borders. Okay, the border thing is really irrelevant. We need to have no borders is what this argument comes down to. And so what you do is you obfuscate what has been legally the case for a managed migration, whether it's refugees or tourism or just garden variety mobility of human beings into a totally unmanageable, open process. The average person doesn't get deep into the weeds about third country discussions because they're saying, "What are all these people doing here?" Or they say, "All these people should be here because we're going to save the world." There's a parallel in my mind with this and the whole change in thinking. For example, we become ideologically driven. This is an ideologically driven thing about refugees. Everybody's a refugee.
And going on with just looking down this article that I found, refugee advocates have long battled the asylum agreement, contending the US is not always a safe country for people fleeing from persecution. In addition to the people that are appealing that, there have been several applicants who are citizens of El Salvador, Ethiopia, and Syria, arriving at Canadian points of entry and sought protection. And they argued in court that by returning them to the United States, they expose them to risks in the form of detention and other rights violations. Federal court justice in 2020, Anne Marie McDonald, concluded the Safe Country Agreement results in ineligible claimants being imprisoned by the US authorities. Detention and the consequences flowing from it are inconsistent with the spirit and objective of the refugee agreement and amount to a violation of the rights guaranteed by Section 7 of the Charter.
So that's to suggest that anybody that is detained by U.S. authorities should be allowed out and come directly to Canada, because the U.S. authorities are imposing cruel and unusual conditions on alleged refugees.
But isn't that perhaps a little bit forward on our part by suggesting that the U.S. system is wrong and ours is right and they should follow our laws, not their own?
Of course. Well, yeah. Yes, this is what happens when the mouse wants to roar.
Mm-hmm. Anyway,
I'm not going to say that, you know, they're always wrong and we're always right on this issue. But if you look at this globally, this has been so screwed up for the last 30, 40 years by perhaps well-meaning but misguided, naive, activists. That the only people that are making anything out of this are the lawyers, the various court systems who are making money out of whole cloth here. Whereas the actual issue of refugees has got nothing to do with it.
It's become a very, very lucrative cottage industry, that's for sure.
It's not a cottage industry, Bob. It's a multi-billion dollar industry. You know, you link that with the traffickers who got their piece of the pie. Then you get all the NGOs that get their piece of the pie. I mean, really, truly, this is so out of control that no one wants to. It's like the third rail on a subway system. Don't touch that because it'll kill you. It's really very complex. They took a relatively simple problem, issue, post-Second World War, and they complicated the living daylights out of it for no other reason than to make it. It's like the tax system. You know, how many hundreds of thousands of accountants make their money simply because we have a bunch of politicians who complicated the hell out of the tax system? Ordinary folks can't fill out their tax forms anymore because they made a simple thing like paying a percentage of your wages to the government to, run the country. No, can't do that. We now have to go to various organizations because a simple tax form can't. This is the same in parallel as what they've done with the refugee thing. It's a big business, okay? And it doesn't matter which side of the business model you're on. You're making money, whether you're a trafficker or a lawyer or the court system, which is overstaffed. Oh, come on.
Yeah. I know. Anyhow.
There's old guys who are saying, what the hell have you done here?
It's going to be interesting to see what the Supreme Court actually comes back and whether they're going to have the cojones to say that our system is working the way it's supposed to, or whether we're going to have to rewrite legislation again. It'll be interesting to see.
Well, the issue of, refugees coming or migrants, I think the last time we spoke, I said that this is not an immigration question or a refugee question. This is a mass migration question. You know, it's peripheral here that we're talking about refugees or real immigration or whatever. This is mass migration on a scale we've not seen in our lifetime since perhaps after the war, where you had millions of displaced people moving about around the world after the end of hostilities in May of 1945. What we have now is enormous millions of people on the move here for economic, social, and environmental reasons, supposedly. But the environmental one really gets me with the energy issues. You know, when you're paying, would you say $2.40 for a liter of gas?
Highest in North America, and our politicians are standing there with a smile on their faces.
Well, exactly. So my question is, at what point does the why would you come to a place that is going to be going progressively down the economic ladder as the cost of goods and services escalate beyond the ability of regular folks to meet their budgets? I look at the catastrophe that's unfolding in front of our eyes in Europe with the sanctions that they've brought upon the Russians over a local, I know that people will be upset when I say this, that the Ukrainians, the Russians, a local issue, but they're destroying an entire continent's ability to in its economy over these sanctions, which have blown up in their faces. And I'm thinking, like, in the migration context, why would you want to go to Europe in the next number of months when everyone's going to be huddled in their one room, hoping to have enough heat to hit maybe 15 degrees, because the gas and the oil is so expensive you can't pay it, or grocery stores are empty? Like, what is going to be the attraction for those millions of migrants from North Africa and from Central Asia and whatever? Why are they going to go to Europe? Like, to me, the numbers that we need to watch now is what happens next.
Well, there's that, but there's still that Wizard of Oz, right? We're all going to go and find the gold brick road, and that's just over the next line, over the next hill, maybe. And until you can change the fact and say, in particular now in Europe, they're going to be in dire straits come this winter. There's no question about it in my mind. North America is the same way. We're going to be with our supply issues and trying to get things organized and getting our own people fed. I don't see a good coming out of this. In Vancouver in particular, we've had so many cases now of anti-Asian, anti-this, anti-that, because I guess they're seen as the problem. I don't know what the issue is, but I can see that increasing, particularly as you said before, when it gets to $3 a liter for gasoline and we can't afford pay the prices that it's going to cost to get our food from Mexico or southern US, so that we can still have our apples and peaches and strawberries and lettuce. It's not going to end well.
Well, and I think we're living in the era of the greedy and the gullible.
Mm-hmm.
The greedy being the elites who seem to think none of this is going to affect them. Everything is going to be just hunky dory, and the gullible who believe everything is going to be okay too, because there's this magic fairy dust that's going to come down, and it's all going to be all right. I was reading this morning, and I posted it on our Facebook Border Poll page, which is just incredible, and that is that some geniuses in the EU want to set up a consumer cartel against the oil companies. A consumer cartel is going to say, we're not going to pay this money to you. Okay, we're not going to pay $2.40 a liter. I'm only going to pay $1. I'm like, are you nuts? You go to gas stations and you fill up your tank and say, I'm not going to pay this. I'm just going to pay what I think it's worth. Or go to the grocery store, the checkout, and I'm not paying this. I'm only going to, it bills $35. I'm only going to pay $15. See how far you get with that.
I guess
people lost their minds.
If you go to the self-serve checkout, you can always get the employee discount.
I'm thinking, the I'm sorry, these people are so gullible, to believe guys like Mario Draghi, who was a former prime minister of Italy. You sent him packing a couple of weeks ago anyway, because he's a European Union hack. He used to be part of the World Bank, making up fairy tale stories about how you can run an economy by printing money. Well, we now see where we've come to with that, place in our lives where you have countries that can't afford the bills, and you got the UK with Elizabeth Truss, who suddenly decides that, we're going to cut this, we're going to cut that. And all of a sudden the pound drops out of the sky. The incompetence of these people, and they make up stuff with the gullible belief, and meanwhile the greedy, of course, are doing just fine. The other one that came out, which is another one I didn't post, was you know, how they're cavalierly talking about tactical nuclear weapons, you know, going to be shot back and forth over the Ukrainian Russian thing. I think, do these elites have any idea that if you start firing tactical nuclear, do they actually believe that the fallout isn't going to affect them? You know, that they're suddenly going to be immune. The, you know, millions of other people will croak, but they're not going to be affected because of, you know, that.
Well, you know, darn
what
well.
Kind of morons are running this world?
We used to have a sign as you entered into the city of Vancouver, and that sign was in prominent places on the road. Welcome to Vancouver, a nuclear-free zone. So if you put a sign up like that, I'm pretty sure that all that nuclear waste and fallout would just
stop right there. You know, honestly, it's, we live in these facile twits that are, they're actually taking up space in prominent positions. I'm thinking, this is crazy. It's crazy talk when you've got, oh, we're going to just, you know, tactical, the warmongers, tactical nuclear weapons here, there, and everywhere. It sounds like, you know, it's like these people watch far too much TV or you know, CGI movies, sitting in their underwear in their basements, dreaming up this stuff. I'm sorry, this is
bizarre. Well, real life example. Take a look at the last volcanic blasts that have gone on in the world. What was it, 4 years ago, 5 years ago in Iceland, the one that shut down the entire air traffic in and out of?
Yes, we had one of our guys stuck in London, remember?
Yeah. So that, to me, that's the real world. That's what you should be looking at, you know. And I'm sorry if it's one nuclear weapon goes tactically or not. Nobody's going to sit back and say, oh, I guess we deserve that. You know, there's another one go up, and then somebody's going to say, well, geez, we better get ready. And then the next thing you know, everybody's sitting at 1 minute to midnight and with their finger over a red button, ready to push their issues, you know.
The issue of Armageddon, and this is going to sound really cruel again, is over 8 million Russians in Eastern Ukraine is ridiculous. Okay. You're not going to blow up the world for that. And anybody who thinks that this is a binary issue here, we're going to save that, you know, first of all, the 8 million Russians in Eastern Ukraine are being shelled by their pals, the Ukrainians. Well, they're shelling their own people. And I'm thinking, okay, for this, you want to go into a nuclear war? Have you lost your mind? You know?
Well, there's always that one rogue element. I don't, yeah.
Well, yeah, I know. It's like the one about the pipelines that got blown up. I don't know how that happened. Gee whiz, it's, I'm sorry, but the amount of lying that goes on over this whole thing it blew up by itself. Why would you blow up your own infrastructure? I don't know.
Well, it's always interesting to try and follow up on these things and figure, well, who's telling the truth, and is this a plot or a counterplot or a counter-counterplot or a
Listen, when the American Secretary of State says this is a great opportunity for us to, you know, really work on climate change because there'll be no oil or gas, so we can now, you know, find alternative ways to freeze in the dark. You must be, you know, you think, okay, now you're telling me the truth, because this is what you're doing, you know, and you've got those naive twits in Europe who think that suddenly there's going to be dozens of ships being built in North America to send liquid natural gas over there into ports that haven't been built on ships that have yet to come off the drawing board. You know, I mean, this is insane.
And on top of that, in Canada, in particular, where there are pipelines yet to be built to put that to a
place. You mean the ones that were built and shut down? You know, you can't make this stuff up. You're thinking, who are these people who, like, what's the end game here? You know,
well, it always goes back to that old adage, follow the money.
Oh, well, follow the money. I got one for you this morning. You know how much I like the Arrive Can program. I've been a real supporter of that. Well, today they found out that actually cost $54 million. The Globe and Mail, which is a national paper in Canada, decided that they're going to stick their necks out, even though they get subsidized by the federal government. They're 54 million. Remember when we were first told about this crazy program that it was only 25 million. Now it's more than double. I'm quite sure it's more than. But you can't really ask too many questions about this because there are 72 subcontractors in this program. And because of privacy and what's the commercial confidentiality, we can't tell you how those 72 contractors divvied up to $54 million. You want to tell me that this isn't smelly?
Well, an interesting anecdote. I was reading in our local paper, and I don't know if I mentioned this or not, but anyway, it starts out with a guy who says, we were visiting the interior of British Columbia, and he thought we would like to take the southern route home, which in BC is Highway 3. Travels right along the southern, northern border, southern border between Canada and the United States. They're driving down the highway and they see the sign, oh, next left turn takes you towards the east. Well, I guess the west must be a little further up. Well, they never saw the sign. They never saw the sign. They ended up at the US border. Don't have passports. Cars full of fruit and all kinds of things that you're not supposed to take into the United States. Well, we missed the turn. And the guy says, well, whether you miss the turn or not, we kind of have to go through the whole thing with him, you know. Anyway, they went and said, well, you really can't come into the United States. And the guy says, well, that's good because I didn't want to come here anyway. So they go back to Canada and talk to one of our friendly CBSA guys. And they said, where have you been? Just been refused entry into the United States. Well, why were you refused entry in the United States? Well, we don't have passports. Well, why don't you have a passport? Because we weren't planning on going to the United States. We were planning to go to Vancouver, but we missed the turn. Well, you're seeking entry, so where's your Arrive Can app? You didn't fill it out. Well, we weren't planning on, well, you're coming into Canada, you know. And what have you got with you? Well, we've got alcohol, we've got cigarettes, we've got all this kind of stuff.
None of which came from the US, of course.
No. So anyway, to make a long story longer, they finally were admitted into Canada, went up the road, found the sign that said instead of going now, turning left would take them to Vancouver where they wanted to go. Thought they were going to have lots of time to get onto the ferry to take them over to Vancouver Island. Managed just to make that by the skin of their teeth. Got home, sat down and said, boy, isn't that who'd have believed this? Well, 2 days later, the wife gets a call from Health Canada to say that she's been selected for random COVID testing. Thank you,
Is that the coincidence?
ArriveCan. Thank you, ArriveCan app, right?
Yeah.
So anyway, yeah, it's not, I have no idea why they started that and why they're still trying to defend it. And I don't think it makes things easier. I think you're putting a lot of faith in a government with personal information that they really, really, really shouldn't have.
Well, and that brings us to really the third block we were going to talk about, which is new technology. Not just, I mean, the Arrive Can thing is a specifically Canadian anomaly. That's the kindest word I can use. But the whole business of new technology globally is, like, what can we come up with that can make things, short of having no border? When we talked about years ago at post 9/11, having to come up with ways to, better screen travelers at the same time to ensure that the legal and other requirements were met, but without slowing down the movement of legitimate traffic across international borders. So we had everything from the, you know, PR personal name record invented, and they had various transnational programs through ICAO and the UN, basically, to track people as they, you know, they came up with the, you know, the common passport program, so that they were all the same, all those standards. And, you know, at literally everybody knows where everybody's going today. You know, they linked passports to credit cards, to airline tickets. In fact, if you went out and wanted to buy an airline ticket with cash, everyone would look at you askance, say, what are you doing here? Mm-hmm. Okay. And more than 20 years ago, I was at a meeting in London with some folks from one of those three-letter agencies that we were having a discussion about security. And the chap was telling me at a dinner that, you know, there's not going to be any more terrorist hijackings anymore, period. And I looked at him and I said, what are you talking about? That's not possible. I said, oh, no, that's really possible. He said, because I can tell you who's getting on an airplane in Tokyo flying to Uzbekistan, who will never come to the United States. But I know where he bought the ticket, where he was going, when he's going back, what he does for a living. And he went on and on and on. I'm looking at him like, you know, are you kidding me? And it turns out this was now well and truly the domain of the Cray computer, sitting somewhere in Utah, sucking up billions and billions of bytes of information. And the three-letter agencies knew darn well that, you know, you don't have to worry about that anymore, because we know where everybody's going, who they are, and what they're doing. And we don't care that they're never coming to the United States. We already have that information. And so much for the sovereignty of Japan about the guy traveling to Uzbekistan, because, you know, that didn't exist anymore. And now you fast forward to today, and I guarantee you, way beyond what that guy told me, and he probably shouldn't have told me any of that. But the point is, so what do we do next? We know who's coming and going.
Yeah.
You know, the we have enough information about everybody and anything. What's the new world order here on you know, managing migration? Because, you know, if you're going to argue we don't need borders, you know what, that argument might make sense, because you know where everybody's going anyway.
Yeah.
And I'm not talking about some conspiracy thing, we're all going to get chips in our heads and whatever. We don't need that. No. You know, unless you're living under a rock in a desert, everybody knows everything about everybody.
And if the idea is to get rid of borders, then you had better be prepared for the consequences, you know, and that will mean that there will be nobody really screening people.
You know, what are you screening them for?
Well, and I guess that the big one, I guess, is the criminality, you know.
Okay, but you already know who the criminals are.
That's true, but you don't know that the criminal's not living next door to you now, right? I mean,
no, but I mean, if you can't get on an airplane, you can't get on a ship, you can't cross the border without someone knowing who you are, where you came from. The only hole in this argument at the moment I have, and I put that up, is this absolute open border in the southern United States and the open border in Europe across the Mediterranean. Nobody knows. These people show up, they got nothing. No paperwork, no, you know, they make up stuff. Oh, my name is Juan or Ezekiel or whatever. And they put this on a piece of paper and they release them inland. Mm. So there's millions of those folks who we know nothing about, apparently. But at some point, the system does catch up with them, because they got to eat. They got to pay bills. They have to, you know, the we live in a 21st century. There's just things that you have to get or you can't survive in a modern society. Even a basic society. So, you know, we really have to wonder, like, where do we come down on this business now? Because what border? Do we need borders?
Well, it's going to be an interesting discussion as things move forward. And in particular with the migrants that are out there, you know, everybody, I can't blame people for doing what they're doing. I guess if I was in the same situation, I'd certainly be looking at doing the same thing, probably. But until we can get rid of this whole issue of the grass is greener on the other side, and perhaps even going a bit further, that we start to redistribute wealth so that everybody has a modicum of a decent life.
Well, I don't know. I think these guys want everything local to be global. I know this sounds crazy, but you can't make everything global local, or you can't make everything local global. But that's the aim here. And you know, you really have to wonder where the greedy and the gullible fit in on this. That's my kind of buzzword for today, is the greedy and the gullible. The gullible will tell you that everything is great, you know, we don't need borders. I'm playing the devil's advocate here. And the greedy goes, it's really even better for me, because, you know, I can make money out of whole cloth here. I mean, literally. So
that's right. I can make money on both sides here.
Yeah, you got it. So it's like I say, all this is, of course, depends on how we face the inevitable hardships that, by the way, are all man-made, that we're heading towards, particularly the next 3 to 6 months, because of the screw-ups in the world politics, the energy crisis, again, self-imposed, and the absolute dearth of adult leadership, which is so clear. I mean, I just, you know, and you don't, we just have lost it. I don't understand. Something in the DNA, maybe it was fluoride in the water 50 years ago.
Or something, well, that's for sure. Uh-oh.
Who's that? Someone calling us?
Another call in, yeah.
Another call. Well, listen, we're down to our last minute and a half anyway, so that must have been the sign. You guys get off. We need to use the system.
Yeah, we've pissed off enough people.
It's okay. That's all right. That's a word that's acceptable, I think, for YouTube and Rumble. Yeah. Anyway, listen.
In an interesting discussion, yeah, I think probably the gullible and the greedy is probably an accurate summation of what's going to transpire, what is transpiring.
Maybe they'll call this edition the gullible and greedy edition.
Sounds good to me.
Post it as that. Anyway, we're running out of time here. But I'll see you in 8 days or so.
All righty.
I know you have a busy week ahead of you.
Yeah.
That sounds great. And we'll rejoin this discussion.
Absolutely. Have a great Canadian Thanksgiving yourself.
Indeed, to all our Canadian viewers and listeners.
That's right. And once again, to all the viewers and watchers, likes or dislikes, let us know, please.
Indeed. Take care, Bob.
You too.